Good evening. My name is Thomas Steininger. I welcome you to Redevolve, our weekly webcast for consciousness and culture. Today, I have with me from Scotland, Marilyn Hamilton. Marilyn, are you here in the conference room?
I am here, Thomas. Delighted to be.
Marilyn, great to have you. I'm very excited about this conversation. You are founder of Integral City Meshworks, a global constellation of communities of practice that aspire to transform cities into human hives. I'm really excited to talk about what you mean with human hives. You launched this in 2005 in Canada, but you're working right now with Integral City Meshworks in the USA, in the Netherlands, in Russia, Mexico, South Africa. You have written a book about integral cities. You are going to write a second book. In fact, you have written it already. It will be published soon. Marilyn, I would like to start our conversation with the very simple question. Integral cities and integral city meshworks, what is it? What you are engaged in? What is the vision? What you're doing? What is the work? What you're doing? If you just say some introductory words about what you're doing with integral cities.
Thank you, Thomas. Yes. Well, what I am called to do with Integral City is to actually create a new paradigm, a new framework for the city, a new way for people to think and live in cities, and to consider them to be evolutionary living systems. I have used the integral model to try to unpack that, but I really try to explore it as an evolutionary living system, like a beehive, only a human hive.
Let me start with living systems. That holds already something, because first, you seem to have a systems approach in what you're doing. And second, you call it a living system. Can you tell a little bit more, what is a living system? How does this term living system play a role in the way you do your work?
Well, I would say that many people might understand this through a lens that's becoming well-known called biomimicry. Mm-hmm. So actually looking at natural systems to see what we can learn about our own human system. Mm-hmm. And of course, we are a natural system. Human systems are living systems. And that has really been sort of how my own career and path has developed. It's been working with and understanding and facilitating the development of leadership and then teams and then organizations and then sectors and then communities and finally cities. And so I look at each one of those as a different scale of human system, and they're all alive.
You mentioned about biomimicry, and I also heard you talk about in other interviews you gave how you are very inspired by the beehive, and you use the word hive as part of your work. How does biomimicry work? How does biomimicry can be related to our human systems? In your case, how we organize our cities together. Can you tell a little bit, a beehive is a beehive. How are we related to what a beehive does?
Well, that's a good question. If people who are listening know the integral frame, I would actually say that we're more a bio-psycho-cultural social hive, but okay. It's much faster to say bio, much faster to say that we are a human hive. Mm-hmm. I've looked at the bees because this is sort of one of my intuitions to think that the beehive, honeybees, are actually 100 million years old. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be the oldest of the invertebrate species, and humans are supposed to be the most developed of the vertebrates. So I wondered what we might learn from a species that's 100 million years old that has about 50 million bees in a hive. So I thought that it was worthwhile to consider the science, and there's been an incredible amount of research done on bees, and consider how might that actually give us some mirrors to think about the human system of the city.
What can we learn from the bees?
Well, you know, they have a remarkable system in that not only are there 50,000 bees in a hive, but they have a communication system. Mm-hmm. And the communication system, many people know as the waggle dance. There's also a great deal of non-dance, like pheromone system that helps them communicate. And the bees have a goal. And so I have somewhat of a business background. And when I learned that a beehive had a goal, my ears pricked up and I said, well, what's the goal they're working towards? Mm-hmm. And the goal turns out to be producing a certain amount of honey a year, 20 kilograms of honey a year, in order to support and sustain the hive. Mm-hmm. So in order to do that, they've developed four roles. And those roles I think about as having similar roles in the city. So the roles of within the beehive, these were actually identified by Howard Bloom, who wrote a book called Global Brain. Mm-hmm. And he used to be an entomologist, and as he had been observing people in his new careers, including being a rock and roll impresario, he realized, you know, humans aren't a lot different than the bees that I used to look at and examine from a scientific point of view. And the four roles he identified within the hive, he called conformity enforcers. They're the bees that go off and forage and bring back food, nectar and pollen to the hive. And the second role he identified was diversity generators. And diversity generators also are foragers, but they do not go to the same plants and flowers that the conformity enforcers do. So this means that conformity enforcers come back to the hive. About 90% of the hive are conformity enforcers, and they do this waggle dance. This is like a major energy expression in the hive. I think about it as like, you know, a party, like a rave. Okay. So when 90% of the hive is actually having this dance, then the two other roles come into play, and that is they're the resource allocators who say, we are actually on track to doing what our goal says that we must do. And the fourth role is called an inner judge. Now we think of this as a hive mind. Mm-hmm. And together, the resource allocators and the hive, the inner judge or hive mind, they're a very small percentage of the bees. And they actually are controlling the rewards that they give the bee, the forager bees, for their performance. So if you can imagine when the forager bees, the conformity enforcers, are coming back with 100% of their load, they get rewarded with 100% of bee fuel to go back and get some more. But gradually, when the conformity enforcers keep going back to the same patch of flowers, they come back with less and less of the performance or the amount of energy they're bringing back into the hive. And therefore, the resource allocators actually cut them off. And that means that eventually they do not get any reward. And this causes all those bees to actually become depressed. Mm-hmm. Now, they can actually measure depression in bees through their pheromones. And meanwhile, those busy diversity generators are going off to all sorts of other different sources of energy and pollen and nectar, and they come back and they continue to do their dance. Now, it happens that when these depressed bees are trying to stay contributing to the sustainability of the hive, they finally notice the information that the diversity generators are giving, and they fly off and find these new patches of flowers. So this then means that they start to get rewarded again. They get over their depression, get on with the work that they're supposed to do. And this means that the beehive has actually got quite a strong sustainability strategy, in that it uses these two kinds of forager bees to continuously source their renewable energy. There's one more thing that they do that I think is something that we have to consider for our cities. And that is that as they are collecting the pollen and nectar, of course, they're pollinating their ecoregion. Mm-hmm. And this means they're not only working toward the goal to sustain their hive for this year, in pollinating their ecoregion, they are actually creating the resources for next year. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes a double sustainability loop. And I feel that this is an enormous contribution of the bees to nature, to the value they add to the earth. And so I've been asking the questions, well, you know, so what value do humans add to the earth? Mm-hmm. And so I feel that as humans, our qualities are obviously different than the bees. And I have lately come to believe that humans are what James Lovelock, who is the mm-hmm. author of the Gaia hypothesis, he says that humans are Gaia's reflective organs.
All right. As part of this of Gaia's reflective organ, I would like to look into how do you apply what you learn from the bees. Working with real cities. You have worked with cities, I stated in the beginning, in Canada and US, in South Africa, in Europe. How can we imagine how you do this? You go there. Who are you talking to? What kind of collective intelligence are you kind of bringing together? And how does this work look like that you, developed there?
So that's a good question, Thomas, because I am looking for what I call the four voices of the city. Mm-hmm. And the four voices relate to those roles in the beehive. So the conformity enforcers become our citizens. Most people are citizens of their city. The resource allocators become civic managers. They're the people in city hall and education and healthcare and justice. Emergency response, they're the ones that are actually keeping the city operating. The diversity generators are business and innovation, artists, engineers. And finally, I think that the inner judge are actually the role that's being played by civil society is they're actually trying to notice what are the factors that contribute to the well-being of the city. Mm-hmm. So when I go to a city, that is who I like to work with, representing the whole system. I would like to sit around a table with representatives of the citizens, the civic managers, the business community, and the civil society. And when I can bring those people together, the thing that I'm looking for is where is the energy? Mm-hmm. Where is the energy for change? Where is the energy for what we want and visualize best for our city?
Interesting.
And this means that I can start anywhere in working with a city. It doesn't have to be with City Hall. It could be with any group of people who has energy for what they want to do. Let's start there, and then let's see who else should be in the room. Mm-hmm.
So basically, you start somewhere with one of the voices, to use still the image of the beehive, and you try to create with the voices that are in the room, that are at the table, to create an integrated whole, to look what voices are missing, and then look forward to create a diversity of voices that represents the whole of the city. Is that how I should imagine this?
Yes, I think that's a good way to frame it. And I think what you hit on is it could be one of the voices who invites me in. It could be one or two. It's generally not all four voices, but mm-hmm. whoever it is that invites me in, I request in order for me to be able to, if you want, do some kind of due diligence to see if they really are up to making the commitment to make the change. I ask for them to bring into the room all of the four voices, and together we have a dialogue.
There's one question which is all the time as you're talking in my mind, and maybe I'm asking it too soon, but I'm asking it anyway, because you seem to be working with this hive intelligence, and you use the beehive as an example. And there's something that I am very struck thinking about beehives, that researchers, as far as I know, are not really clear when they do research about beehives, if they should consider them a kind of a system of different animals, or if they should consider them as one being. In German, there's even, in traditional old German, there's even a word for bees that is a singular and means the whole beehive. And I kind of have the feeling that when you're talking about creating integral cities, that you also intend to create an integrated intelligence that is not just the different parts of the system, different voices coming together, but creating an integrated whole that becomes something like a whole intelligence that holds all these different aspects. Could one say that, and is this part of what your approach is about?
I think, again, you framed that quite nicely. When I was writing my first book, actually, I just submitted my third book to the publisher.
But
when I was writing my first book, I had tried to think about human systems at the scale of the city. And it came to me to really frame a series of intelligences that a human system at that scale would need in order for it to be a city that was fully alive and functioning with the maximum optimum well-being. Mm-hmm. And then when I came to write the last chapter, what I realized was there was what I've come to call a master code. Mm-hmm. A master code that is, I think it arises from the evolutionary intelligence. And the code is something I think that the bees emulate. And the code basically says you must take care of yourself so that you can take care of others. So together we can take care of our places or our hives. And by doing that, we can actually care for our planet. So, I think that's fascinating. I didn't know there was a word in German that described like the bee system as a sort of a whole integrated system. There is this expression in English now, hive mind. Mm-hmm. And I know you and I have been also experimenting with this in terms of dialogue and what we call we space. Mm-hmm. So I would say the bees do have this sense of their individual functioning. So they actually have to pretty well function as individuals, but they're also always serving the hive at the same time. So they are contexting individual performance within the actual well-being of the hive. And I aspire to that for cities.
And when you're saying what you were just saying, you wrote, I wrote down also that you mentioned what you want to integrate here is a series of intelligences. That already kind of is an idea first, that we as humans not only have one intelligence, that there are a series of intelligences, and that we have to bring them together. And I find very fascinating, because what you're doing seems to be so much related to a lot of aspects of what integral theory is about, but you apply this to something quite practical, because a city is a city. It's a very practical place. It's usually a small or a big place where a lot of people come together. So seeing this place also as a coming together of a series of intelligences that have to support each other and to have to be integrated seems to be a very particular approach how we can develop our city lives. Can you tell a little more about what is the series of intelligences that you're talking about, and how do you work with cities to bring them together?
It's interesting because I wrote that book. That first book about the intelligences was published in 2008. And I haven't really changed my mind about them, maybe refined them more,
okay.
found more supporting evidence for them. There was actually, the 12 intelligences break down into five sets. So I'll talk about the sets first of all.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is a set of contexting intelligences. The second is a set of individual intelligences. The third of collective intelligences. The fourth of strategic intelligences. And then the last one, the evolutionary intelligence itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so within each one of these sets, then there are clusters of individual intelligences. So for example, for contexting, there's, first of all, the ecological intelligence. So a living system has to be aware of the ecological context in which it exists.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly this is something that bees have refined to the utmost. We're such a young species. We probably had a lot of intuitive intelligence in our earlier eras.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost a lot of that right now, and we're scrambling to get it back again. The next intelligence is I call it emergent intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really an intelligence that gives us the capacity to understand ourselves and the rest of our world as complex systems. So to know that despite our rational minds, things don't go from A to B in a straight line, that
mm-hmm.
things are nonlinear, non-local, and the whole contribution that complexity brings to understanding our world. Then I bring in the actual integral as an intelligence, because this is a way of being able to look at things as a whole. I find that actually one of the greatest challenges for people is to hold the city as a whole. It's so complex, they mostly just get really mesmerized by all the detail and the dynamics. And being able to frame the city as an integral whole allows us to be able to locate the different aspects, realities, domains, even developmental levels, and it's a very powerful frame to be able to hold the whole.
Mm-hmm.
Then the fourth intelligence in the contexting is living intelligence. So this is the intelligence that tells us we actually have more than one generation. So, you know, any family these days will have 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 generations alive at the same time. And the city does too. And we have to be aware of the generational impact that we make on one another as we actually have a trajectory through our generations that we build on as we move forward, as we age, as our chronology changes.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the contexting intelligences, Thomas. Any questions about that, or should I go on?
I have a question that's related, because to the complexity that you're applying here, and also just seeing that you just talked about one of the five sets of the of intelligences that you mentioned before, the context, and you have the collective, then you have the strategic, then you have the evolutionary, and all these intelligences that you're describing right now, from eco to the living intelligence, are only in the first set. So what you're describing is a really highly complex system of intelligences. And maybe it's also going beyond what we can do in a radio broadcast, really go into all of the details of what you're doing. But what I'm getting is this highly integrated complexity that you are describing. And I guess that you are coming with this frame to the people you work, maybe people in a city council or people from a civil society or whoever is approaching you, whoever you're working with. And you bring all these different aspects and these different forms of intelligences that people have to have in mind, because in the end, you said the important thing is that people are able to hold the city as a whole.
Yes.
That seems to be an unbelievable endeavor to do this, to hold all these different aspects. That seems to be beyond our minds, so to say. I would say, how can we do this? And we are just talking about the city. We're not talking about society or the globe or human evolution as a whole. We're just talking how to hold the whole of a city and all these different aspects without getting lost in the complexity. What do you suggest when you come to the cities to, on one hand, appreciate that this is really, it's a complex matter, a city is a complex matter, but then come together in a way that this can be held in a kind of a natural way of holding the whole. I'm just fascinated, how is this practical possible to do all of this that you're suggesting here?
Well, one of the things that the Beehive does is it gives people an image of something they can see and even imagine, you know, putting their arms around, literally. Not too many people want to actually hug a beehive, but they can actually visualize it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I go to start working with the city, as I said, I start working with the four voices. Mm-hmm. But I do not go there with any expectation that I'm going to preach to them or tell them about all these wonderful frameworks or the five maps of wholeness that I have developed for the city. My job is to go and listen. Mm-hmm. Listen really deeply. And that is why I like to listen to the four voices. And after I have listened, I like to have a tour of the city. Then I will take out my own a chart, basically, of these intelligences, and I have a rating system, and I will actually give a assessment of what I have learned about the city. Mm-hmm. Depending on who I'm working with, I will give that back to them. If they are not going to be able to make use of that, then I keep that for my own notes, and I use it to help me design for them the next natural step in where they would like to go. Mm-hmm. So my job, and I also have teams of people now working with me, our job is to listen very, very intently and to respect the living system that we're in and to be able to try to suggest to them the questions that will help them move to the next natural step that they want to go to. The city that I worked with in Oklahoma in the United States, I spent 4 years over a series of 12 dialogues that was continuously fed back, just like the bees feed each other. We fed back the information we found out from one another. So I not only listen, I create with my teams dialogue con the environment so everyone else can listen to everyone else in the city. And it is really, really impressive and amazing how they wake up together because they discover the city that was invisible to them, even with people they've known all their lives. And so one of the most simple and intuitive ways for people to see the city of the whole is to invite the four voices so mm-hmm. they can see the four voices. I usually tell them the story of the bees because I can do it in quite a humorous way and mm-hmm. demonstrate the waggle dance, and they get it. So even if they get just a small part of it, they understand that the master code that the bees, and I think a really intelligent city ought to live by, they also understand that. It's embedded in most faith systems. Mm-hmm. And so those are the simple things I work with. I look, mm-hmm. first of all, for the energy. I bring the four voices together, mm-hmm. and then we move on from there. Mm-hmm.
The reason why I was asking this, because I have an assumption here, and I just want to clarify if this is a right or a wrong assumption. Obviously, you have really, using the integral model and using your own research, developed a really in-depth, broad, and complex system of different perspectives, of different intelligences that you seem to be able to hold, to understand, and also to bring to people. But it seems that what you're really looking for, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that there is something coming together in a collective listening. And what it sounds to me, also because I know that you are interested in this WeSpace work, that there is an intelligence opening up that just comes by people holding this different intelligence that they bring to the table as a whole, and something is forming that creates an intelligence that, not by thinking everything through necessarily, but by holding this, allows to respond to complexity that we on our own are never able to respond to. But it's more coming from a listening process, an intuitive process that maybe allows us to hold also the integration that you're talking about less in an intellectual way, although this is, of course, needed to support it, but something that is related to a very intuitive way of listening and understanding from these voices coming together. Is this something you can relate to?
Yeah, very much so. And I would say one of the ways I've translated that for people is to say, you know, most of the time we concentrate on looking at place making in cities. We want to, you know, build artifacts, buildings, get the streets paved properly. And we do all kinds of charting and tracking of that. But really, I propose to people that what is most needed is place caring. Mm-hmm. And to care for our places means to care for ourselves, each other, and ultimately for the planet. Mm-hmm. So I think it is my experience that as, when people will be together for half day, a day, with an intention to discover the best of what they want to create together, I do think that a we space emerges. They have a sense of themselves they never had before. And I know that when I work with my teams, we're always looking for this, holding this space for this to emerge. And I'm what you would call a radical optimist. So I'm well aware of all the challenges that humans have made for Mother Earth. But I do think we also have been given the capacity to evolve, so that not only will we develop individually and collectively in groups, but I actually even think that cities will discover their own purpose in service to Gaia. Mm-hmm. I think that there will be a whole system of that Gaia's reflective organ that James Lovelock talked about. When I heard him say that, I was driving along onto the airport actually to go for a conference, and I drove off the road because it meant so much to me. Because mm-hmm. I think what I grokked in that moment was that if humans are Gaia's reflective organs, I think the cities are the actual organs at scale of the planet, and that within the organs, individuals are cells and our organizations are her organelles. And so just like I would say one of my points of departure was to think that the city is the human body and being writ large. And we have to be able to understand a city that way, or we'll never be able to make them coherent and livable and make us feel fully alive. And I do think that's what we have to contribute to Gaia as her reflective organ, not just individual cities, but an organ system mm-hmm. that's part of the whole noosphere.
Mm-hmm. But if I may stop here for a moment and again go back to this term from Lovelock, Gaia's reflective organ. And we let that in, what are you saying here? Because basically, if that really is something that has reality, we are Gaia's reflective organ, you are creating an image of something. There is a whole already, which is Gaia, and we are not separate from Gaia. And we being the organ, we are not talking only about our intelligence. We are talking about the intelligence of Gaia itself coming through us. And I wonder, because of when you were responding to my invitation for this webcast, you also mentioned something that I was surprised to read. You were talking about how important it is for you when you are developing this work in the way that you're doing, what you called listening to the still small voice in yourself. There's a dimension coming in that you not necessarily expect from someone who is so immersed in system thinking, in holistic thinking. there's another side that I'm very interested. And you even said, because you're not living in Canada, you originally came from Canada, but you changed the place we are living in. You're living in Findhorn right now, which is a place really known for deep spiritual ecology, let's put it that way. Can you tell me more about how this all goes together? We being Gaia's reflective organ, this inner voice that seems to be so important to listen to, this still small voice, as you called it, and how this is something that is able to hold these different intelligences that you try to bring together in your work.
Yes. Well, you know, it's easier to look back and see a series of things than necessarily realize what's happening in the moment. Okay. So I'm actually living in a place in Findhorn, which is the UK's oldest eco-village, and the founders were very attuned to spiritual reality and life, and their whole intention of creating this community was actually to do it imbued with spirit. Mm-hmm. So this is very common language around here, the still small voice. And mm-hmm. it's actually working backwards why I am living here now. But I'll rewind back to before I even wrote my first book. I'll go back to even before I went back to school. And I was working with an organization where we actually had a practice of meditation in the morning as a way of starting the day. A bit unusual for profit-making organizations, but I had been inspired by its founder to hold prayer meetings, completely optional, of course. Mm-hmm. And I was in there one morning, and I heard this distinct voice say to me, "Look at cities." I went, "Cities? No, I don't do cities. I'm not a city planner. No, don't do that." Well, wherever that voice originated from, it didn't go away, and I had an argument with it for about 2 months probably. Finally, I gave up. I said, "Okay, I'll look at cities, but I can only look at cities through the ways that I've been working through human systems." Well, that seemed to be just fine with the still small voice. So that is really what took me back to school, what took me to looking at communities, what took me into actually starting to have a very quite powerful inner life mm-hmm. that built around a purpose for myself that I had gradually been coming to work from. So I was making choices in my own work and service that related to my purpose. So I'll just share that if it's appropriate.
Sure.
I say that I'm a wholehearted and holy-hearted, fully conscious human being, joyfully and creatively waking up the human hive as Gaia's reflective organ. A bit long, but it's had its own evolution. So anyway, it's what drives me, and it's what helps me make choices. Should I do this? Should I do that? I also believe it's an attractor. Mm-hmm. So in complexity, we talk about strange attractors, and this, I would say, is a delightful attractor, but it's also a very challenging one. However, it makes me wake up when I hear things. So I told you I almost drove off the road when I heard James Lovelock. And so there was the synchronicity that I was actually listening to that radio cast and even heard that. And some years before that, I had been listening to Lynn Twist, who you might know from her book, Soul of Money. And she's written about how she was dreamed by the Achuar Indians into the upper Amazon. And I actually went to a presentation she made in Vancouver many years ago. And I heard her say, when she asked the Achuar, why did they dream her there? They said to her, to change the dream of the North. And that also, I happened to be sitting in a church pew at that time, but I almost fell off pew because it really so strongly resonated with the work I was being called to do. With rethinking cities, I realized, well, if we did that, then we would change the dream of the North. And the dream of, I've come to think of that, especially now that I've moved even further north to the 59th parallel in Findhorn, that there seems to be some power to that. There is an attractive force that's inviting me to. I just came back in November from Russia for the second time. I've just been invited to Finland. There's something about this North energy that seems to be calling. And I feel like there's a whole series of ways that it gives me suggestions, gives me empowerment, it gives me just creative energy and inspiration.
What you're describing here are to put it in a very neutral term, is a very deep intuitive intelligence that seems to be talking to you. At least it shows up as a voice. And it has something that usually when people think about systems thinking seems to be very far away. This inner voice that you're hearing and all the complexity that you're holding, how do you hold this together? How is this intelligence related to all this other intelligence? Is this something where maybe this is even the integration point of all the intelligences that you are aware of?
Well, I guess I would have to agree with that because, you know, almost the most recent still small voice spoke to me when I was at Findhorn last year. And I was here just taking a workshop. I was also here performing a very sacred ritual, not related to the workshop. I was standing in a building that you will appreciate the synchronicity of the name of the house, which had been the house where the co-founders lived. The name of the house was Genesis. From the window of Genesis, I heard, "What if you lived here? What if you lived here?" And I was like astonished, like I was alone in the room, alone in the house. Where did that come from? And I heard, "What if you lived in Findhorn for the next 6 months?" And finally, I set out to find out, what if I lived in Findhorn? And it came to seem that was actually the next natural step for me to not only take myself to, but also really launch the next phase of Integral City Meshworks. So you ask, how can I hold all this? Well, it isn't a matter of like, it's more like a matter of living from day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute. There's a lot of trust involved. And it's basically, I would say, letting go and letting God. And when I am able to do that at a very deep level, things just happen. All of the complexity simply becomes quite simple. And that is actually how I was able to hear the question and answer it. And I've been able to do everything from not only move self and a few possessions, but also gain access for visas and all the difficult, you know, legal things we're supposed to, you know, cause us to stop doing anything. It's just like, I really do feel that by deeply living on purpose and listening deeply, you know, Findhorn isn't, it isn't even accidental that I'm here. There are three principles that Findhorn lives by. They are listen, deep inner listening is one of them. Mm-hmm. The second one is work as love in action. And the third one is co-creating with nature. And they're just so easily resonant with the values and the intentions and the callings that I have. I don't have to explain what a calling is here. Why did you come to Findhorn? And I say, people ask all the time, that's a, mm-hmm. that's sort of the introductory question. And I just say, I was called. And everybody just goes, oh, okay, sure, right. That's normal around here.
Now, the way you're describing this, and as I said, I was really fascinated when I read this in the email you responded to me. You described this very much as also your personal story and how this brought you where you are right now, physically, but more than physically. I would like, and I hope this is okay with you, I would like to connect this again with the particular work that you're doing, working with city development, integral city hive consciousness, if I may say so, and you're interested in V-spaces that you, again, as I understand, also try to apply in the city work that you're doing. Do you think that this kind of still small voice is something that is only applying for individuals, or is basically the way we come together, whatever collective context, in your context, how we run cities, that there is something that we should listen to that is also important beside all this different dimension that you were describing, and that maybe has some integrative power to all of that?
Well, I'm sure there is. When I meet with my Integral City core group, the very first thing that we would do is a ritual for presencing ourselves, to bring ourselves present to wherever we have been from to now. And living at Findhorn, you know, their practice here is attunement. So they attune before they do any task. So who's ever involved in the team actually attunes to the work to be done. And when I spent last week, I did one of their foundational programs called Experience Week, and I ended up my service, so everybody has to do service work, within the garden. So there's lots of decisions to make when you're doing gardening. So we would actually attune to plants, whether we should transplant them, whether this was selected for this particular spot. So for me, this was just really applying this capacity to presence, this noticing of really the consciousness that is really the source of all that we are, I believe. And it comes through. So we would often say as a team, well, we had a decision to make. We would all be quiet for a few minutes and we would ask the question, and then we would come up with, well, what did you think? What did you think? What did you, and 9 times out of 10, we all thought the same thing without having checked with one another. So something was coming through us. And I feel that, as I also wrote in that last chapter of my first book, I really did think there was something that would be like a hive intelligence, that cities would be the most likely human system to emerge, simply because of the density of humans that are there. And I have a little bit more of a complex perspective of how that is showing up these days, but certainly being at FinTorn reminds me on a daily basis that practice, like any of our spiritual disciplines that involve practice, which they pretty well all do, practicing how we are together can change both individuals and groups and accelerate evolution, I believe.
The perspective that you're describing here is a deep spiritual one. At the same time, you are deeply immersed in integral theory, in system thinking. You work with people who are, let's say, not necessarily in the same environment that you experience in FinTorn. How do you find that these different fields that you are working in and living in, your capacity of system development, the different cities that you work with, your inner spiritual life, what you're experiencing in FinTorn, how is this part of human emergence? How is this part of human evolution? How does this come together?
Well, as I said earlier, I think we're a very immature species. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, it's very fragmented and broken apart, and people don't see the natural coherence. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that when I was trying to think through the four voices of the city, I asked myself, well, who's acting as the hive mind? Mm-hmm. And I came to the conclusion it was the civil sector. So that includes the faith community, not-for-profits, non-governmental organizations. And many of them are either competing, fighting, or ignoring one another. And much to my surprise, when I went to the faith community, who I thought would naturally be attracted to think of themselves as being able to hold the whole spiritual life of the city, most practitioners, even within the integral community, this is a completely new idea. Because within the integral movement, so much of the deep work that's done is done outside of cities. You go to retreats, you go to places in nature. And these are, you know, we well know, renewing places. Mm-hmm. But they hadn't really stepped into the possibility that when they come home and back to the city, which pretty well everybody did, they actually had a catalyzing role to play. Mm-hmm. So I would say the combination of listening deeply, first of all, finding the energy for change, because if there's no energy, I don't think it's my job to stir it up. If there is energy, then I look for how to amplify it. And I also look for bringing in a team to work with supporting what's needed in any particular area. And that's going to vary quite a lot from city to city. So I don't try to do the work on my own. I've never intended to, never wanted to. And I do think it is, as I've worked with the core group with Integral City over the years, we just naturally evolved into our own experience of we space. Mm-hmm. As how do we communicate as a team? How can we be more effective as a team? And then became more adept at being able to actually create, we call them habitats or labitats, learning habitats. Mm-hmm. for the four voices to convene in.
Mm. I have to admit, Marilyn, listening to you as you're talking right now, you do change my understanding of what the city is. Because I understood that you are working with integral cities. I understood that you're working with the system perspectives. I understood that you have also this inner spiritual intuitive intelligence that's holding all of this. But the way you are talking about it, it more and more came to me. You have a certain vision what a city is that's radical, new, and different. Because all of a sudden, I saw the cities of this planet of Gaia being as much as a living life form as any forest or beehive or kind of a field of flowers. There is something where the city becomes not just part of the problem, but part of the solution. But I'm not talking about a pragmatic level, but really where if you let a city be in this way, as you're describing it, there's a new life form created through us, where a city has a deep ecological and a deep spiritual dimension that I haven't been aware of. I would not have contributed it to a body called city. And this seems to be the vision that is driving you. Is this completely off, or is it something that relates to how you see your work?
It is how I see my work. And for me, it's just natural. Most people want to badmouth cities. And I say, no, actually, I have come across in the last week the description that what we can evolve into is a super organism. Mm-hmm. In service to Gaia. And I believe that if bees who've been around for 100 million years can contribute so much value to life on Earth, the species of Homo sapiens has to step up to the plate and contribute what we have been evolved to be and do.
Mm-hmm. I have to admit, and it's maybe naive on my side, maybe intellectually, but not really, I've never really considered cities being part of Gaia.
Ah.
Which, of course, when you think it through, it doesn't really make sense because, it just doesn't make sense. But intuitively, it's really the case that basically when you think about Gaia, at least when I think about Gaia, you think about the living planet as the nature of this planet, and humanity as humanity. But seeing that the cities are also living organs of our human race that are part of this Gaia emergence seems to be something that is a new insight to me.
Wonderful. I'm delighted.
And I'm really very fascinated and thank you for that, because it was definitely this conversation that brought me to this maybe trivial insight, but for me it's not. And it also allows to see the integral vision in a very particular way, because all of a sudden you see how these life forms of cities that we are creating are really kind of, as you're describing, habitats or labitats that in itself, if we approach it the right way, are that the breeding ground of the intelligence that we are creating together. And that this is something that holds an integral vision how we can go further in our human evolution in a very practical way, because then basically you also see, yes, cities are kind of these biotopes where this intelligence can come to itself, can form itself, and it makes sense to do the work the way you are doing.
Thank you, Thomas. That's lovely to hear from your voice.
Marilyn, thank you very much. We are also at the end of our hour, and I thank you for participating in this broadcast. When people are more interested to hear about your work, which website would you recommend?
www.integralcity.com.
Thank you very much. I'm forward to talking to you again. And thank you for your work. Also, thank you everyone who was listening to this webcast. A good evening from here, from Frankfurt in Germany.